Right, you know what I want to talk about really quick right here at the
what
start?
What do you want to talk about really quick right at the start?
I want to talk about how apparently Nate thinks that he's better than us. He is a little more of a scholarly man than I over here, just sitting here and watching movies, because I think we got a kind of a reader on our hands.
I'm a book reader now, but you know what? I'll let you in on a little secret. I've been cheating.
You don't even have to do the hard part, which is reading,
I don't use my eyes.
What do you use, buddy?
My ears. With audible.com. Wow. //movies, brother. So we're doing The Hobbit for this episode, and I have been listening to The Hobbit book through Audible. It's been fun. I think by the end, when we do all the whole series, we'll kind of do a little bit of a comparison to see how the book and movies, you know, stand up next to each other. But it's just kind of been fun to do the little comparison so far. And it's a good read. It's good value too. It's like 11 hours long. So for your bang for your buck, that's quite a bit of content. But that's kind of what we're offering too. If you want to try that out, if you want to do it with us, we're doing a, you know, you can follow our link to get your first 30 days of Audible free through us, and you know, $14.99 after that. That's what comes with a free book credit every month, and as well as two Audible originals. That's our pitch.
Yeah.
Buy it.
30 days free, guys. So give it a shot. I'll probably start listening to it too, because I haven't started. I have no reason to, and you guys don't have any reason to not get something that would cost $14.95 for free. Follow along The Hobbit with us if you want. If you don't, then find another book. Yeah. There's lots of stuff.
I guess. Okay, cool. Back to the show.
Thing we're connected, and all I can think of is that SpongeBob episode
where they pull up the shirt and there's like a weird heart like connecting them at the love handle.
We're connected.
I like it. Just puts the shirt back down and it's gone.
But why does he? SpongeBob doesn't wear a shirt. What was
he lifts up Squidward's shirt.
No, I think they had a sweater. I think it was like a friendship.
SpongeBob wears a full tucked in button up tie and buckled pants every single day. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but it's more like he can't like pull it up.
He could. Because he could just pull it up out of his pants, you know, because it's just tucked in.
But you know those episodes where it's like you see his outfit,
just
they're like connected.
I mean, he's a box. It doesn't. Why is this the hill you're gonna die on for?
Well, because if you look at him, he is technically wearing a shirt, but the way that SpongeBob looks is like it looks like he's just wearing pants and he's almost shirtless, but really it's just his head.
Yeah.
Is 10 times the size of his body.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay, yeah, he just pulls up, I looked up the picture, he just pulls up Squidward's shirt, yeah.
And then it, like, zooms out. Yeah. It doesn't
disappear.
It's
really, it's on Squidward's, like, love handle, but it's on SpongeBob's face, so that's not a great...
The anatomy of a sponge, dude. Look how, I'm really thinking about it now. Can you imagine if you just walked around, if there was a person that walked around and their face started at their hip? Because that's basically what SpongeBob is. Like, if your head started at your hip and went all the way up to the top of where your head is now.
No, he just has a 3-inch torso. That's all. It doesn't start there. His torso is the shirt. It's just from the collar down to the pants.
But that's what I'm saying. So it would start, like, right at the top of your hip.
What would?
Your head. Your head would start here and end here. Look at the size. His mouth is there. His eyes are there. Take that size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just saying. I don't know how we took this turn.
So The Hobbit.
So nothing new with you then. Just
nothing
SpongeBob.
New ever happens to me.
SpongeBob memes waking up on the wrong side of the back.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, what's your crazy life?
My crazy life, dude? Mm-hmm.
You've been doing shit.
It looks like I'm going to be living in an attic soon, so that's
nice.
Fun.
Nice. Really stepping up.
Yeah, selling my house and living in an attic. I think I might just occupy this attic.
Yep.
So when the people move
have
in.
An attic.
You have an attic here. What house doesn't have an attic, you weirdo?
There are houses without attics.
Well, my mom attics. Well, I would assume so, but maybe I'll just like occupy my attic and then haunt the people that move in here. That'd be kind of fun.
Where would you go poo-poo?
Dude, the attic's big.
I guess, yeah. Just have a corner. That'll work. That's fine.
Have a litter box, and I can sprinkle it all out once it kind of decays and stuff through the air vents.
That's
like, why is there dust falling from our air vents?
That's disgusting. This guy says one of the best movies of any kind I've ever seen, talking about The Hobbit.
All right, yeah, let's jump in, boys. The reason you guys are listening to this episode is because you want to hear all about Lauder and The Hobbit. Lord of the Rings.
Lauder.
And The Hobbit.
Fort Lauderdale.
Again, this is a movie that I've never seen.
Wow, brand new.
Which is all of the Lord of the Rings universe movies, Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, all that stuff. So yeah, you guys bear with us here, because you know this whole doing a new, you know, episode every week.
So this
basing it on what's up?
This came out in 2012, same year as Avengers, and it made $1 billion. The box office, yeah.
I'm not surprised. One of those things that, like, it was exciting and people were excited for that first one. Then after, they're like, they just didn't care as
I'm
much.
I'm just surprised that you didn't see it, because it was, like, middle of high school for us. You know, I mean, like, you know, big movie coming out.
Well, I didn't, because I hadn't seen Lord of the Rings. You know how I am about not wanting to see movies if I haven't seen other movies.
Yeah, but, like, technically, if there were any prequel you should see first, it would have been this one.
I don't know.
Because if you had seen these first, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think if you had seen these first and then Lord of the Rings, you probably would have liked The Hobbit more. Not then Lord of the Rings, but more in general than I think most people do. I don't know. I don't know if most people like it a lot. I mean, it's not terribly reviewed or anything. I think as a whole, The Hobbit trilogy people don't like, but I think they kind of like this one, starting off the first one. It's got like 65% on Rotten Tomatoes. Pretty high IMDb score, 7.8. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And all the little you know, user reviews are all high, so wouldn't be surprised. But
yeah, do you got any interesting facts about this movie? I'm gonna be honest here with our audience here. You know, we're starting this whole new thing where we're doing a second episode a week based on, you know, a series, and we're playing with the format a little bit. Instead of, you know, jumping right into that movie news and stuff, screw all that. We're jumping right in. But to start off, before we really dive deep,
yep.
Give me a little fun tidbit about this movie.
There's an elk in this movie that's a horse named Moose. Boom.
There's an elk that's a horse. Is it elk or a horse or a moose?
It's all three, actually. First one of its kind.
Elk and horse moose?
It's a CG elk that's played by a mocap horse, and that horse, the horse actor's name is Moose.
Mork. I was just trying to figure out how to put all the words together. Moose, elk, horse?
No,
wait,
it has
no,
to be, it'd be
moose,
mork,
horse,
mork.
Mork.
That's dumb.
What a fun
That's
fact.
Dumb. Super fun. They almost cast Tobey Maguire to be Bilbo Baggins.
Ooh, yeah, I don't know about that, dude.
You'll get your Erebor when you fix this damn door. That's such a dumb reference.
Okay.
Also, Shia LaBeouf was considered.
What?
Again, why? What are they doing?
Well, we say that. I feel like you say that, like people say that about castings after they've seen it, because they're so used to how the other person looks.
Yeah, but Shia LaBeouf.
I mean, I agree now, but maybe it would have been good, dude. I will say that
Shia LaBeouf playing what's his name's uncle, Frodo's uncle.
Yeah, I will say
weird
that having Martin Freeman.
Yeah.
Was a good pick because I can kind of see resemblance enough.
Yeah, and he plays the polite but disgruntled Englishman like trope that is definitely I think what
well
what
that's
they
probably why they decided
Bilbo to be. Yeah,
good job.
That's basically
casting.
What he plays. Like everything I've seen Martin Freeman in, for the most part, except for the American spy he plays in Marvel movies, but like in Sherlock, you know, he's basically the same guy as he's based Bilbo in Sherlock too. Yeah.
But Sherlock's really good, and I started watching it, and I've watched quite a few episodes, but
it's been so long now, because that show came out in like 2009 or 10.
I never finished watching it, though.
And I think
but
it ended
really
in 2013, and I watched it as it was coming out, so God, I haven't even thought of it. I remember not being super happy with the last episode of last season, like the way it ends, but all the other stuff in there
that
is really
Sherlock
good.
Versus Sherlock, Robert Downey Jr.,
go. Oh, it's still the show, I think. Yeah, for sure.
I like them both for very different reasons. But anyways, that's a whole other podcast. Dude, they're deforesting my neighborhood right now.
Yeah, they really are.
What is going on? I'm so glad I'm getting out of this place. God.
They don't even like trees
disrespect.
Here. I'm going to move up north where it's a city with less trees.
How dare you disrespect, man. I've been laying in bed. I've been hearing them earth grumbles like we were talking about last episode, bro. Earth. they're like, stop it.
Stop it. Don't, let's not go back into this. Do you know there's no men in this movie? As in, like, actual humans?
Humans?
Yeah.
I guess
which
right.
are just the race of men in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, God, I guess you're right.
You should know that by now. Yeah. I just
was
I
that
read
a fun
that
fact,
I was like,
dude?
That's a fun
was
fact.
That, a fun
that is
fact?
A fun fact.
All right. Well, as you guys know, this, maybe you don't, but yep. I would assume that you would, that this is based off of a book called The Hobbit.
Written in 1937.
Yeah. So The Hobbit came before Lord of the Rings, the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's very interesting to me that
it's like 20 years before
Tolkien decided to write The Hobbit and then decided to write a trilogy. It's just weird. Usually when you have a trilogy, you have like, or you'll have longer, you have like kind of like a saga almost, I feel like. Yep. Maybe it's just more with movies, I guess, but you have like three books about something and then another trilogy later that maybe connect better than the, you know what I'm saying?
I think it makes sense because, I mean, obviously I think when he wrote The Hobbit, that's one of his earlier works, so he was still like a much more of a novice to writing in comparison to when he wrote the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which right. he had already been doing it for a long, long time.
No, but I'm just saying it's interesting that like it's one book and they go, oh, I really like that universe and it was received very well. I'm going to write yep. a whole trilogy, but not continue with The Hobbit. As a trilogy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just interesting to have one and then three that all lead into each other. I just yeah. never seen it before. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just, it was interesting.
You know, it's even crazy. He wrote The Hobbit in 1937 and the last Lord of the Rings, like, or I guess Middle Earth world universe book he wrote was, I think The Cimmerillion in like 1977.
That's a long time.
So, yeah. I mean, that's crazy that
a
man was still writing in the universe. Well, and also, he didn't even write that many books. I mean, you compare this to, like, Game of Thrones, where, I mean, like, George R. R. Martin wrote, like, I think, like, seven books over the course of, like, a pretty similar time. I think he started in the 80s, but still, just a lot more books and compare. Well, I mean, I guess maybe just, like, two more, but I don't know. Feels like
writing
feels
a book
like more.
Seems like a lot of work.
It is.
But what I was going to say was,
I guess, I've never
the done Hobbit started, like, he conceived the idea of the story apparently when this is what I found, you know, doing mm-hmm. research, so who knows if it's true, but when a single sentence popped into his head, in a hole in the ground there lived a hobbit.
Yep.
Didn't he create the term hobbit? If I'm not mistaken, he did. I know that it's apparently another thing I found is that it is trademarked, so I think he created that term, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Wow. He totally
so
did.
What's interesting is
Holdweller.
He said that, or they're saying that the sentence that popped in his head, because he's a creative guy, obviously, writing yep. books and stuff, but he's sitting around and all of a sudden he thinks, in a hole in the ground lived a hobbit. You know how weird that is? It sounds very normal to us because we know the term hobbit.
Yeah.
But that's like if I was just going, I'm just kind of thinking of stuff and I go, man. A tree. There once lived a shiglegamid. What? Yep. This man just created a word.
Well, it's a little bit. It's not. So apparently he derived the term hobbit from hobbelita, which is an old English word that means hole dweller.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense. Because all I'm thinking is this man created the word.
What if there were little people with hairy feet that lived in the ground named hobbits?
yeah, like it sounds like a it's interesting because, you know, you say a word over and over and it starts to sound like not a word, or you just make up a word and it sounds like nonsense until it catches on.
We're just not creative people. I guess this is normal for people
Dang,
who do this
dude.
All the time.
No, but it's just that's what I'm saying. It's like, I guess now that you've kind of ruined that mystery for me that it derived from something else.
Sorry, dude.
How dare you?
Had to learn eventually.
Another interesting thing about this movie is when they filmed, they shot and screened it in 48 frames per second, which is double the industry standard of 24 frames per second.
Oh, I did not know that.
It's the first feature-length movie to be shot and screened at 48 frames per second.
That's really weird.
And apparently was used to create smoother, more fluid action and improve the visual effect of viewing the movie in 3D.
Hmm.
The ending result was that some people loved it, some people hated it, and some people didn't even notice it.
Yeah. I guess that would be me, yeah. I didn't necessarily notice it, but I mean, the action does look a lot different in this movie. And I just kind of summed it up to all the use of CG that wasn't in Lord of the Rings. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm wondering if it like reduces the amount of, I mean, I'm sure it would, but like motion blur when they're doing like, you know, action shots.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it would do.
But is that good? It's interesting because I feel like even like we get blur. Like if I move my hand in front of me, I can see blur. So like that's realistic.
It feels a little odd, unnatural to have it the other way.
But because don't your eyes see things in like 24 frames, right?
I think it's like 30 or something like that. Yeah, that's the normal. That's kind of a weird thing. I've heard that before, and I think it's
that's
true.
That's so wrong.
Oh yeah, see.
Apparently, from the first thing I'm seeing when I look up, although the human eye and brain can interpret up to 1,000 frames per second. Someone sitting in a chair and actively guessing at how high a frame rate is can, on average, interpret up to 150 frames per second.
Huh.
Which is a lot higher, so yeah. We're idiots. no, but I what I'm saying is I would imagine that even at 24 frames a second that you're getting more blur than you would see normally. But what's interesting is I think a lot of us get conditioned to what certain things look like in movies.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
take that for being real, but if it happened in real life, it wouldn't look like that.
Yeah.
And so you have something that looks like it would be real in a movie and you go, that doesn't look right. And it's like, no, that's how it would look. But now we're conditioned to make things look how it would look in Hollywood, which is tricking us into thinking that it's actually real.
Right.
Because we've never been in big battles or in front of a giant, you know, enormous creature that doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. It's always been kind of interesting.
Yeah, there's certainly an expectation to how things are supposed to be shown, and so when that breaks the mold, I guess you can either, most of the time I think people automatically go, this is weird and I don't like it.
Yeah. Another thing,
but I don't think it hurts this that particular thing.
Hit me, because I got two more facts that I think are actually worth talking about.
Yeah, okay.
Unless you got a couple.
No, go for it. I brought up the moose thing, so.
Yeah, great stuff here. So when Tolkien sold the rights to The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, he demanded a guarantee that the Walt Disney Company would never be involved with adaptations of his work.
Interesting.
Because he had an intense hatred for the studio's eternally upbeat, bright, and frequently altered adaptations of well-known stories, and he rejected several previous offers for movies based on Middle-earth due to pitches seeming to be too Disney-fied.
I kind of agree.
This is the funny part.
Uh-oh.
4 years after he died in 1977, The Hobbit was adapted into an animated musical released by Warner Brothers.
Oh, that, yeah, the animated thing is.
That's this picture I showed you, dude.
Sucks.
Look at this. That's this. That's the little Cabbage Patch Man. Bilbo looks like a Cabbage Patch, dude. He spent his entire life trying to fight off not being Disney-fied.
Must have been some of his family member, whoever like got it, I guess, were
that sucks, bro. Because like you have this, you know, you have this really cool, like, in-depth, like fantasy world that you've created, and you want it to be kind of, you know, realistic as you can be with
those
rules of
the universe.
Yeah, it has
darkness to it. It's not just a hubbly bubbly, you know.
Which this brings me into. We'll talk about this when we dive in the movie. The humor in this movie did not work for me. But
so yeah.
I mean, you could say if you agree or disagree or stuff. I don't want to like cut you off because
I agree.
Say that.
That was a big thing for me for sure.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that. Last fact is that apparently the hobbits don't actually have big feet.
Mm.
That apparently
that's a film thing?
In the books, they were never actually described as like that being a hobbit trait, like they're hairy and stuff, and maybe Frodo's was like they in a description when they're talking about Frodo's like, oh, his big feet, whatever, but apparently they took it and just like made them all have large feet.
Well, I know that
not necessarily besides,
because I've been listening to The Hobbit on Audible.
Ooh.
Just a quick throw in there, and so I know that the book does reference that they never wear shoes, their feet are hairy, and the bottom of their feet are extra leathery and callousy. But I guess you're right, they never actually say that they're large.
Yeah, they do say hairy, but not necessarily oversized.
Yeah. That's crazy. Wow.
I just thought that was interesting because especially in this movie, I saw a couple scenes like, dude, those man's feet are huge,
yeah,
bro.
They are. In comparison to their body, for sure. It's like wearing a size 15, but you're like 5'2".
Yeah, it's crazy. and then there Another interesting thing about this movie that I'm just now, as far as sort of diving in a little bit, is it's kind of interesting when you look at Lord of the Rings and Hobbit, oh, just in general, how they make the hobbits look as small as they are.
Oh,
with camera work and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that was definitely a big thing that we both saw for Lord of the Rings, because obviously they didn't do CGI, so it was a lot of forced perspective stuff, especially in motion, which was crazy how they had to
do. And apparently, the first shot of Fellowship, not the first shot, one of the first shots where Gandalf...
Like Gandalf and Frodo or Bilbo meeting. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently, I'm sure you saw that video. We seem to reference Quarter Crew a lot. Guys, come on the show. where they basically, every time it was the back of another character, it was double different. Or somebody who was either shorter if it was the Hobbit or taller if it was Gandalf.
Yeah.
Which is just...
I think they had a 7-foot tall guy play the back double of Ian McKellen. And then, some under 5-foot guy play, I can't remember the name of the guy who plays Bilbo in the original, but and a lot of that stuff, but also I don't know if you remember that table scene where I think it's Frodo and Gandalf around inside of Bilbo's house, where they're both sitting at a table together and they have to they do the force perspective where Frodo is closer to the camera and Gandalf is farther away, but it's in motion, so they have to keep up. So the rig's moving with the camera, and it's so nuts how they did it. But I think in this movie they just did a lot more CGI and just said fuck it. I think they
probably
did a lot of it.
But it wasn't.
It's hard for me to
exactly
say.
As far as the size stuff goes, it wasn't really that. I couldn't really tell. Probably because they were around dwarves a lot, so it wasn't as big of a deal because dwarves are also shorter.
Yeah, but
not
all
as short
those
as
actors,
hobbits.
All those dwarf actors had to be sized down too, because all those guys are not.
I know, but the thing is, you're sizing them down mainly when they're around other people. So Gandalf is the only kind of issue there.
Well, that's not necessarily they have to be sized down for their proportions too, as far as they're throughout every time you see a dwarf on screen. Their real life actor is resized.
Yeah, some of the dwarfs look a little short and stockier than the others. The main dwarf guy looks like he'd be a normal human size.
He's definitely he's too boxy. People are rectangle. They're much longer than they are, for the most part, generally longer than they are wide. And all the dwarves are basically a box. They're basically
I would say almost as wide as they are tall. I don't think the main one really
Thorin,
was more. I'm sure they did something to him.
Thorin and Keeley, who's handsome dwarf, and I think even some of those are they look more human, but they're still not.
No, I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm just saying that it's impressive because that is one thing as far as there are some places in this movie CGI is lacking, but that was not one of them for me. They always seem to do a really good job with sizing people.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool.
I tell you what, as long as we're talking about CG, the one worst looking shot I think in this movie is when those trolls are holding Bilbo. I don't know if you remember, the three big trolls that are around
the
fire.
What you're talking about.
They pick up Bilbo and they're like, "What is this?" He thought he sneezed it out in his hand. It's so janky. Bilbo is not even tracking with his hand at all. It looked terrible.
So anyways, this obviously you guys know that I would assume that this movie is basically just, there's not really much to do as far as explaining. I feel like the plot of it, it's the prequel to the Lord of the Rings. We're following Bilbo's adventures, how he finds the ring, all the adventures he was talking about that he went on that was briefly mentioned and written down in a book for Frodo. So we kind of see that.
The basic synopsis of it is that Gandalf is helping, a party of dwarves led by Thorin, who's the grandson. He's basically Aragorn in dwarf form. He's the grandson of a former king of their old, when they were at the height of their power in Erebor, which is the big mountain which they all lived in. They mined a bunch shit ton of gold and had all riches, and then they lost it to a big ass dragon who just said, "Nah, I'm gonna live here now." And he still does. So, and then they've got Bilbo to help him out, and they're on the trek, and they're gonna be doing that for the next three movies.
I mean, that's just like Lord
Pretty
of the
much.
Rings
I mean,
on the trek.
That's not necessarily
they were on a trek, the same trek for three movies. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying they're on.
I mean, it's more than that. It's not like they're not going to reach Erebor until the end of the last movie or something like that. I'll spoil that for you.
Dang. Well, considering the next movie is called The Desolation of Smaug, I would assume they'd probably run into Smaug in the next movie. How do you pronounce that? Because I don't want to say Smaug.
No, I think it's
like
Smaug.
Yeah. So I feel like I would sound pretentious if I go Smaug. So I got to say it silly every time
I say it.
It's
just like how they say Mordor. It's like we say Mordor, but in the movies they're like Mordor.
But only in some of the movies.
And only in Fellowship, I swear. So I have to go back and watch it
again.
Maybe
the next movies they'll just go Smaug.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys remember Smaug?
You mean Smaug? So, okay, I know that you are somebody that do be liking Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of went into this knowing that you're pretty much going to like those movies.
Yep.
This one, I've known that not as many people
as well regarded, yeah.
Right, and you have even said that. So now that you've watched again, you haven't seen them in a while, we're coming into this where I don't know really your opinion as much as I did the other. So I want to know, what did you think?
I hadn't seen these since they came out, and I think this one came out in 2012, and the last one I think came out maybe like 2014 or 2015. They were pretty similar to the Lord of the Rings, as in they were all kind of filmed together, and then they were released year after year after year, if I'm not mistaken. Actually,
it was 12, 13, 14.
Yeah. Almost, yeah. So going back, I do remember having an overall negative memory of the three movies, but going back to this one, I liked it a little bit more than I thought I would, and overall I liked kind of the first half of it. It felt very like Fellowshipy again, you know, just like a bunch of characters getting back together and being all like bumbly and happy, and it's kind of fun. As this movie goes on, it starts to lose me and I get a little bored. And I think that Desolation and, if I remember correctly, Desolation and Battle of the Five Armies are not great. I think this, if I remember correctly, this one is the one I like the most. Much similar to Lord of the Rings, except to a worse extent. So overall, I didn't hate it. It's not great. It's kind of very average. It's definitely like a letdown from Lord of the Rings of quality. It feels like a lesser movie living in this world. Unfortunately, I'll go more into it later, but I'll kind of pass the question over to you. What are you thinking?
I pretty much am where exactly where you're at. I thought it was all right. It was, you know, it could be a fun movie, but there were a couple of things that just I wasn't like super super invested, and it does make me, like, the Lord of the Rings are better than this. And let me clarify some things, because if you guys are listening to this, I'm assuming you probably also listen to the Lord of the Rings episodes. I feel like I came off as kind of a negative person on the last one. I don't want it to come across as, because you were even like, even in the middle of the episode, you stopped me like, yeah, okay, well, I get all that, but let's talk about some things we liked. And I was like, but first, I just kept going. The reason I want to do that is because I wanted to get out of the way all the things that took me out of those movies.
Yeah.
Because after I was able to pinpoint those things, I liked everything else, which was a good bit, because it was like a 3.5 hour movie.
Right.
So, you know, speaking of the each little small thing for a little, like, you know, a little bit. So I do, like, Lord of the Rings is good. Again, like, it's made for it. I just don't think it's as amazing as everybody hypes it up to be. But that's my personal opinion. So, with that being said, The Hobbit is even still all right. But the Lord of the Rings are better.
Yeah.
So I will give you that.
Yeah, I think that's the general consensus.
Yeah, the way that this, and I actually kind of disagree. I didn't really enjoy the beginning. I think it picked up as it went along, not just because it's like there's more action. They did suffer in parts when it did pick up. There were parts where it kind of loses you and stuff. But I had some issues with the beginning, and we'll go into that when we kind of go over it. But yeah, that's pretty much my overall feel.
Yeah, I think where this movie really struck, I think the biggest thing is probably like the tone of it. It's just so, in comparison to Lord of the Rings, this one's, and it's to an extent, maybe it's trying to be faithful to the book in this way, because I know The Hobbit is kind of a children's book, but it does feel, it feels much more kiddie than Lord of the Rings. Everything, there's like, we briefly addressed the humor doesn't work for either of us, and that's a big thing. There's a lot of like burping and falling jokes and like very like juvenile type humor,
yeah,
and that kind
even
of stuff.
In like the
dwarves are constantly bumbling around and doing dumb stuff. Like there's a fat one who falls through a table, or like, you know, burps loudly, is constantly eating, or like does some dumb shit like that. And then like the big trolls are really dumb, and they do like dumb things and all their scenes and stuff. And there's just, it's laced with that throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it just, none of that stuff really works for me. I don't care about any of it. And when you compare it to the Lord of the Rings, where like you have some comedic characters, like we talked about, kind of like Merry and Pippin and even Gimli, especially in Two Towers and stuff like that. But your main cast are like pretty serious about what they're doing, and it reflects in the kind of stakes of the movie. Everything feels like it really matters to them, and this only feels like it matters to Thorin.
Yeah, and you can even say the dwarves, the race, are kind of like not the most intelligent, and they can be kind of silly, goofy. Oh, we like to drink beer, eat stuff, and be that kind of way.
Right.
But there are still ways to...
But it's so much better. Like, Gimli
has that, but even the way they did his humor didn't feel like we were taking a dwarf from The Hobbit and putting him in The Lord of the Rings. It was a similar... You got the same feel of that's how the dwarves are, not as intelligent, kind of silly, love to, you know, drink beer and eat and do all that kind of stuff. But the way that they played his humor and the jokes they did with him, even being that characteristic, worked. Mm-hmm. So they leaned in on that. And like I said, even the way that you said, like, you know, one of them was like eating and then falling through a table. You could even make falling through a table funny, I think. But the way they did, they didn't. It's like they tossed him a sausage and that was like the last straw and it snapped, but it's like the way they tossed it and he stopped and he goes and like looks at the camera and it breaks. It's like it's, the way it's like that setup,
it's very Looney Tunes like
that's the thing.
It's just too much, and it's just so constant throughout this movie. It's always happening that I just never feel really like they're in any real serious danger. That's a big thing too, is that like a lot of the action as far as the tone in this also feels too cartoony. Like in Goblin Town, after they kill the Goblin King, they're like their wooden like rafter, what is that called, catwalk, you know, when you're constructing and you build like a what is that called,
scaffolding,
thank you, that wooden scaffolding that they're on falls all the way down through the Goblin Town like mine underground area, and it stays together even though everything else is breaking apart, and it's just like so goofy that they survive that. Yeah. It's like,
and then the goblin falls on them,
and it's just like a funny like that kind of stuff is just like I'm not taking any of this seriously, really. Yeah.
And like the big I'm cool with having like a silly, to not just have every like bad guy like just try to be super threatening and like stereotypical. Mm-hmm. So having one that's kind of silly I can buy into, and he was trying to be kind of silly, but it definitely took it too far, I think, for me, when like they're running away, Gandalf's in the front leading the pack, and they're running through all that, trying to run away from all the goblins. Yeah. He pops up, and he's like, what are you going to do now? And Gandalf's like, slice, goes, that'll do it. It's like, come on. Like, he was way too easy to kill, and I get that, like, Gandalf's really powerful, and you can show that he's kind of easy to kill, maybe for Gandalf, but then to be like, what are you going to do? And then he goes... He stops after his neck is sliced, like, that'll do it.
It's like, I know, it's just ridiculous.
It just takes away that kind of, what's the word?
It takes away from the gravitas of it. There's no stakes. And honestly, I mean, when you compare just, and not every story has to be like a super high, you know, not the whole world has to be at stake kind of a thing, but when you go from Lord of the Rings to The Hobbit, you go from, you know, the Lord of the Rings, it's the whole, all of Middle Earth is up for grabs, basically. Like, that's how important this is. And then The Hobbit, it's kind of like, even the characters in it, like, that aren't Thorin, are like, kind of like, this isn't worth doing. Like, yeah, you're just going to cause more trouble than it's worth. So I don't know. It just feels off. And Gandalf saves the party, like, a lot.
Gandalf's shining. Yeah, I love Gandalf. So it's fun
Gandalf,
to see.
But at the same
it's
time,
fun to see, but it doesn't bring the other characters
feel incompetent.
Yeah,
yeah, and kind of useless on their own. It's just kind of like Gandalf's constantly coming in and saving them through various means.
This is how I felt about Merry and Pippin. To be fair, the end of the movie, they did have some redeeming qualities.
Yeah, but imagine if Merry and Pippin were supposed to be like Aragorn and Legolas.
But
But they're not.
But this
they're
is the vibe that
helpless.
I know. But this was it was still the vibe that I was getting, and it just wasn't working. That's why I'm saying it wasn't working for me. I'm just, you know, so yeah. I guess we can kind of run down through a little bit of the timeline, because I took notes throughout this whole movie.
Right.
I actually really liked the beginning. I liked the opening intro.
I thought it was a little long, but I didn't hate it.
So at the end, I was like, wow, he's still narrating. I thought it was definitely long, but I liked it. And I know some people hate narrating at the beginning of movies, but what I liked about this
Lord
was...
Lord of the Rings did the same thing. Fellowship has narration. It's just, it's a lot more condensed. It's quicker, but...
Yeah, but what I liked about this was... At the end of this, I was like, you know what I want to see? Because I liked the idea of this universe. And when I was established in Lord of the Rings, and there was a lot of things, like, you know, there was something that took it out for me and just made it not as amazing as everybody kind of hyped it up to be for me.
Right.
But I loved the concept, and I loved even the concept of the storyline, and I loved a lot of things in it. So I was like, you know, I want to see more. I want to see more that's just the... like within this world, that's not just the journey of the ring.
Yeah, you want to know more of like the background of the lore and stuff like that.
Seeing that stuff, I thought was really cool. Seeing like the dwarven mines, the Erebor, and all that stuff, I thought it was really cool. It was expanding on the lore, and I just thought that was super cool.
The town of Dale outside of Erebor, like all those kind of shots and stuff like that. Even though they are CG, not the miniatures and like you know paintings and stuff like
from Lord of
the
Rings,
it still looked good. Yeah, definitely. So I was happy with that kind of stuff. Even inside, inside of Erebor and stuff still looks good. There's a little bit of a weird thing. As far as I know, that Arkenstone, which I think becomes more important later,
They never say what it
does. They bring it up. I think it becomes more important from what I remember, as in the next two movies.
I would assume so. It's a shiny stone. He took it
and put it above his throne.
Good sign. It's like, but why is it a good sign? I don't know what it can do. It's shiny. That's all I know.
But I don't know if it's actually in the. I'm not far enough into the book to know. But it's not mentioned in the first, like, you know, a good bit of the book that I can remember. So I don't know. I'm not going to do like book comparisons type thing because I think it can be its own movie and have its own additions. But I'll tell you what, one thing I really don't like about this movie is all the Lord of the Rings references and callbacks. There's a shit ton of them in this movie alone.
So,
like, why is. Elrond, Galadriel's in this movie. They tried to get Aragorn and Gimli in this movie, which I was like, that. Thankfully, they both said no, which they would have just felt really forced if they were in here too.
That would have felt... I'm cool with places showing up. I thought when they showed a lot of the places, I thought it was cool. And I'm totally okay with Elrond because... He's an elf that's lived for thousands of years, and if you're going to Rivendell and Gandalf and Elrond have a history and they help each other out, I'm cool with it. I was cool with a lot of them. There was one that I was like, oh, it's fun to see, but like there was no need for it, which was when the orcs...
And Saruman came on too, yeah.
Yeah. When the orcs... Oh, I'm still okay with that because if Gandalf's involved, I wanted to see Saruman be almost more of a good guy though because he still seemed kind of... which I think it can be kind of wishy-washy, which is the point of why he would turn evil because you don't want something that's super good then just completely switching over. But no, the place where the orcs go when he's like, oh, the dwarfs got away and it was like their little like hideout.
Yep.
That was where the fellowship went and where Frodo got stabbed by the... Wraith. It was on that same plateau round little mound and it was ruins.
Yes. Yeah.
That was when it's like, oh, it's cool that they're there, but it's like there's no real meat. Like that was just for that.
And it was kinda like out of all of, like the size of Middle Earth, you happen to go there twice. I mean, Middle Earth isn't super huge, but it's big enough so that it's like that seems a little odd. My main thing is not that the fact that all those characters like Saruman, Galadriel, and Elrond are in the movie. It's the fact that they spend like what I don't know how long that scene is, but when they're in Rivendell, where it's just Gandalf and them talking, it felt like a 20-minute scene where they're all talking about Lord of the Rings, basically. They're talking about some big evils around, and they're talking about Saruman, the necromancer, you know.
But why is that bad if it's setting up?
Well, because it just has no bearing on this story. Right? It's just completely detached from this. They have this conversation talking about Lord of the Rings, and then they keep going.
But that's the thing is, I don't know. If it intermingles with this story better in the later movies, and then also still branches off into Lord of the Rings, I'm cool with it. And I don't know enough about this. I would have to then address this later.
I know for a fact that it has no bearing on this movie, which makes it feel odd for this movie. So I'm viewing this as if I don't know that, I mean, or at least I have never seen Desolation of Smaug and Battle of the Five Armies. And so I don't necessarily like it when a movie just has a complete departure from the story and spends all this time and has no bearing on this immediate kind of story. Maybe it'll come back in like later, but it still feels like it hurt the pacing of it because it really bogs it down in all this other stuff that's just not important to what we're doing.
I mean, I can see where you're coming from, but I think that you kind of have to look at it as in if you haven't seen, even though everybody that wants to see The Hobbit has seen Lord of the Rings, you have to treat it as you haven't seen Lord of the Rings. And what I mean by that is if something happens in our life now, it plays a part to what's going to happen later.
Sure.
So just to, like, I like the fact that now you don't have to show that in the movies. Like, you don't have to have, like, it could be an isolated adventure. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you have, but I'm just saying that if something happens in these movies that kind of have a little bit of a bearing to what happens in Lord of the Rings, that makes sense to me because it's previous. You know what I mean? So I'm cool with it right now. If it seems really forced later, because again, I'm looking at this as a trilogy, because if I haven't seen Lord of the Rings, I'm seeing this first movie, I'm seeing that, okay, this sword might have an importance later, that they found, and this, there's an evil, and then they might talk about more. Like, okay. And then it's like, oh, that's where that came from when you then move on to the Lord of the Rings parts of it. So I don't know. If it feels very pressured, I totally feel where you're coming from, and that it did for you. It just didn't for me.
The Hobbit takes place like 60, maybe like 50 or 60 years before the Fellowship of the Ring. And in between the time of the ends of and the end of the Hobbit and the Fellowship, no one's worried or concerned, as far as we're told in Fellowship, at all about Sauron or the return of him. It's not even a thing
that,
in their
that
mind.
That could make it feel
so
more
it's
forced,
just weird that you'd spend 20 minutes of this movie way before that, kind of like acting like they're already worried about Sauron or something that is some evil that is Sauron, when it's never, when it's just dropped off the face of the earth for 60 more years, and then it's reintroduced as like, oh, it's a new thing. It feels weird.
Yeah, I will say that when Saruman was saying, Sauron's dead. He can't be brought back to his full power or whatever. I wasn't expecting that, because when they're saying some evils, I was like, oh, it's some other evils that would be working with Sauron.
Right.
Or like maybe then branches into Sauron, but not just Sauron from the start.
Yeah.
Because when he was like, Sauron, I was like, we're jumping to that conclusion already?
Right.
Like, I did feel like that specific, but I'm cool with if you have little events that lead to this, lead to that, that lead to Sauron, but just to say Sauron, that felt a little bit.
If it was more connected, right? So, like, this is a really weird example because I'm bringing up a terrible movie, but in Attack of the Clones, you know, Obi-Wan, there's a very similar thing where Obi-Wan goes on this big hunt and it goes on this kind of like mystery detective quest looking, figuring out what are these clones, who's this Jango Fett guy, all this kind of stuff, which is similar to what's going on here, because it doesn't necessarily have a super big bearing on the story immediately, but it actually does, because it's tied in with the immediate story of that movie, even though it's actually more important for like Revenge of the Sith and the future of the overall series, and more and less so for that individual movie, but it's still tied in because Jango Fett tried to assassinate Padme, and the clones will come back and play a role at the end of this movie. So I think there is a way that they could have tied in this necromancer and this whole stuff. It's just the way it's presented in this movie, it's completely isolated. It's just its own thing completely. Does that make sense?
Hello there. That's all I was trying to say after you said Obi-Wan. Yeah, no, I agree. I can see that, like, if that's the only isolated incident, and then that's supposed to set up kind of Lord. I will say I could see where it would feel a little bit, but I'm not super mad at it. If that's the only thing that happens and they don't mention anything like that or enough of it in the next couple movies, then I'll be like, there was no point.
Yeah.
But to me, from this being a start of another trilogy, regardless of whether I've seen Lord of the Rings or not, it's the start of this new prequel trilogy. This is the first movie I can see. Okay, cool. Maybe this is going to set something up, because I don't know. You've seen them, so you have an idea of, I don't think that happened. It might have been a while, so you don't, you know. But something funny at the beginning of this movie when they were showing the Kingdom of
Erebor.
There you go.
The Lonely Mountain.
The dwarves, when they're mining.
Yep.
The dwarf who found the shiny Arkenstone. Because it zoomed on his face, but they all had them. They had mining helmets, which means they're helmets with light. They were literally helmets that had two little like candles on the end, like a candelabra. And I was like, yo, this man got candles on his head.
That would be so, like, that wouldn't work at all.
No, I thought it was. I don't think it would work, first of all.
It would give such terrible light, it wouldn't be worth doing.
Second of all, even though I knew that, I still thought it was kind of cool, but also kind of dumb, but I was like, that's kind of cool. This man got a candle hood. also, the first Okay, the first, what do you point out, dude? What's happening? Are they taking down my house?
Lots of stuff.
Is my house getting
bulldozed? There's just men outside.
Oh, they're in my yard.
Yeah. I don't think you'll hear. If you hear a little bit of lawn work on the mic, I apologize, but I'm not going to do anything about it.
I don't apologize.
Oh, dang. Okay. Get the fuck over it.
Okay, so when Gandalf...
There's no way. Hey, buddy. Oh, I don't know how well he can see us because it's kind of darker in here than it is out there.
You can totally see us. Oh, okay. There's not tinted windows. This isn't a car.
I'm just saying. Well, you know how it is. It's like...
No, I've looked through my windows in my house many a times. Anyways, so Gandalf, when he shows up in this movie, when he first shows up to younger Bilbo, looks like a different actor. I don't know. Something with his face is like, who is he? And then later he looks like Gandalf again, like the same actor.
Yeah.
I was like,
Ian McKellen.
Yeah. I was like, that was weird. That's all I have to say about it. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, he is, you know, Sir Ian McKellen. I know Christopher Lee is unfortunately dead.
Christopher Lee
plays Saruman.
For the Hobbit movies?
For both.
I'm saying that he was alive for the Hobbit movies.
Yes,
you're saying he's dead now.
He's dead now, yeah.
Gotcha.
But I'm just saying, I know that...
I was like, dang, they did a good recast or face like CGI in his face.
Oh, for 2012, that would have been amazing.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I was like, oh my.
He is still, but yes, Ian McKellen's 80. And he would have been, you know, he went from being like in his 60s for Lord of the Rings to being in his 70s for this. So
he didn't look that much older. Like, I mean, as far as like, he looked pretty good as far as like just being an old wizard already kind of thing. But the first shot, for some reason, I was like, I don't know why. That's legit all I have to say about that. what I did like as far as like throwbacks to the other movies, I did like, because he was narrating it, it was like he was first starting to write it, so it went back to, then it cut back to present day, which was the first day of the first Lord of the Rings movie,
right?
Where they're setting up for Bilbo's party. I really liked that, because that was something that, like, sure, they didn't need, but they were setting up the story anyways, and they were presenting that this was in this book that he was writing, and then I didn't expect to see Frodo. I was like, oh, Frodo's in this movie, because you see Frodo, and then he's like... he puts the sign on the front gate of saying, like, no visitors unless it's party business or something like that. And you saw that in the first Lord of the Rings. Then Frodo goes off. He's like, I'm going to go to the whatever. I'm going to go surprise him. I was like, that's kind of cool. I don't know. I do like throwbacks if they don't, like, take away from the movie or if they add to the movie.
Little stuff like that's fine. It's just when it – and some things, like, one of the callbacks I really don't like is how Gandalf's sword – in Lord of the Rings is the sword he finds in that troll cave.
You don't like that?
I don't like it. It's just so, it's like, it takes, it's the same thing as like when we find out, this is another Star Wars reference. I promise I know more than Star Wars. But when we find out in Solo, the movie, how Han Solo got his gun, it's so unceremonious. It's just, it takes away because in your mind,
Nick Fury,
it's like,
gets his eye scratched out by a cat.
It's not, I don't think it's as bad. That's like the worst example you can find of taking away from like some of the mystery and badass of a character, because it's just like, you just found it in a cave. That trolls got cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, even to an extent, I don't think you needed to show that. I think you probably needed to show how Bilbo got his elven sword, but the way he gets it is also through that cave troll, and it's also like, oh, he just found it in a hole.
Yeah. Another thing,
it's just kind of lame.
Another thing about that sword, they didn't explain the whole glowing blue thing.
Yeah, it's an elven blade. That means it's glowing blue, but just that one.
None of the elven blades do. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, I said, so. Do all the elven blades do that? No, they do not.
Yeah.
And that was his his reasoning behind why it's glowing blue. It's because it's elvish.
It's almost like it's, since, because it's mentioned that, you know, like one of the dwarves basically says, I probably wouldn't call that a sword. It's more like a butter knife or an envelope cutter, or whatever, a letter opener. So I'm thinking to myself, the way I would explain it off, this doesn't really excuse the movie because they don't say this, but it's almost like a sword that you give for someone small and like, not a warrior type, like, you know, almost like a wife of one of the people or something like that. I'm not saying women can't fight, but
in the movie,
I mean,
they do say protect the women and children in the Lord of the Rings.
There's not really that many women warriors in the Lord of the Rings, you know. It was written a
which
long time
why
ago
why they got that lady out there, and she just killed the Wraith man.
Yeah, that's true.
Witch King.
She's
probably not
badass,
permanently, but
and
killed him.
There are women warriors, I'll I'll break spoil in a little mold. Bit in The Hobbit and the later movies. But
the point is they set up that mold to be broken.
Right. But it's purposefully made that way. But the way they explain it does make it sound like that all elven blades should be able to just withstand. You know what I mean?
You mean glow blue?
They should all glow blue. Sorry, I don't know what stand came from.
Blow glue.
Blow glue.
Blow glue.
They should blow glue.
Okay.
Blow my glue.
So the beginning, I'm going to try to kind of not go too specific and just try to pick moments because I have some specific stuff I'll touch. But the beginning where all the dwarves kind of come in.
Yep.
And you kind of said you like the beginning where everybody's kind of getting together. Some of that was cool, but at the same time, I'm like, man, these guys, like, Gandalf's just letting them come in and wreck his place. I'm like, I'm kind of not liking these dwarves from the get-go because they're just, like, coming in and destroying the place. Granted, when they left, he woke up the next morning, everything's clean. I guess Gandalf knew that would happen. That's like, it'll all be okay. Like, we'll clean up. Also, the biggest thing is, I don't...
Well, you're also, you know, if Gandalf is... inviting Bilbo onto this adventure that if successful will make him richer than he can imagine.
It's not it wasn't a huge deal.
It's not a big deal, but also you got to remember Gandalf is in this like higher plane where everything that, you know, things that bother regular hobbit like people, you know, like being like having a dirty house or using a little bit of your food are like the
problem. He walks into his pantry, there's nothing there.
Yeah, but they're the concerns of ants to him. You know what I mean? It's like
that was the biggest one is that he walked into his pantry, there's nothing there. So unless they restocked his food, still kind of not a nice thing to do.
Well, dwarves aren't exactly the most polite.
fair. Also, it was kind of strange that he picked Bilbo at the start. They didn't really give any reason. And then later he explains it a little more, which I kind of was okay with it. But it was strange at the beginning to be like, I'm not understanding why he came to Bilbo.
The only real reason is that he knew Bilbo. He knew the family of Bilbo's mother's side, who were surprisingly courageous hobbits. You know, he tells that whole story, which is probably not 100% true.
I must have missed that.
You remember this? It's actually, it's funny because it, to me, where he smacked that goblin's head off so hard and it like flew off and went into a hole and it just inadvertently invented the game of golf, which made me think golf exists in Middle Earth, which is just weird. Like golf as we know it to an extent exists in Middle Earth. There's just dudes out there like Aragorn on weekends playing golf or something.
I feel like it's just a hobbit game. You know what I mean? Like, because they have like little parties.
But still,
and,
like Frodo and Sam are like playing golf like in between the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. And there's also another thing is that Bilbo says, they destroyed my plumbing, which makes me think, you have running water and plumbing in Lord of the Rings too, which seems odd.
I think they could have running, well...
In a medieval, like, setting fantasy thing, that's weird.
It is weird, but you do see that they have, like, a whole kitchen and stuff, so it's like...
Kitchens aren't weird to have, but
I'm saying, like,
water running from some kind of source and having that, like,
well,
setup.
I think that, because there were, like, dishes and to be washed, like, I think there were sinks and stuff.
You would bring in from, like, a well. Yeah, you could have, like, a pump that you'd bring in, like, a bucket, and you'd soak all the dishes in, like, in a sink. You could plug a sink and then soak it that way, but to actually have... like water from a tap or like a bathroom indoors that you can flush seems nuts.
Did they mention plumbing in the Hobbit book?
Not as far as I can tell. No. it's just that kind of stuff is kind of funny to me. It's not really that big of a deal. You just kind of go from here. So a big thing that we haven't talked about yet is kind of the villain of this movie, who is the white orc.
Pretty much the worst part of the CGI of the movie.
Yeah.
It just looks fake the whole time.
He reminds me of, who's that guy? Malekith?
Yeah.
From Dark World? Yeah. Thor the Dark World? They have the exact same look to me. And honestly,
they're white?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow,
well,
you hate white people?
No, they literally.
You hate white people?
What is he in? Isn't he like a dark elf?
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, dark elves in MCU and white orcs in Tolkien look exactly the same.
They don't look exactly the same, but I see what you're saying.
I'm gonna compare.
I know
Malekith.
What they both look like. They're both like pale white people creatures.
Yeah,
yes,
cursed. Yeah,
I'll give you that.
Just for my own sake, because I haven't seen the movie version of this. Yeah, I mean, It's a little different, but yeah, pretty much the same.
So you had a problem with him? Why? Because he was evil just for being evil kind of thing?
Well, okay, so it's kind of weird because Sauron is, when you, because you have to make that comparison, because Sauron is literally the epitome of evil for just being evil. He has, we'd know nothing about his, like, quote-unquote motivations, at least from the movies, on why
he wants to just be evil.
I just want to control everything. That's it.
Well, yes, but I think the evil is just because he wants to have control over, yeah, but like, he wants to, it's like you want to be a king. It's like the idea of power. There was a ring of power. He wants to be able to say, like, this is my earth. I'm controlling it. I make the decisions. I want to control this.
Yeah.
Now, granted, that's a very blanket statement. If you're going to be somebody just to be evil, that's kind of always the reason. But to be fair, that's the reason.
Well, that's usually what people don't like. They like, people always kind of say things like, I like, you know, complicated, sympathetic, almost villains where you can. Yeah. And that's all true. But it's not, it doesn't have to be like, great villains don't have to be sympathetic. Stuff like that. I think what makes Sauron great is like his like
mystery,
mental manipulation through the ring and how that, like, you know, everyone can be a Sauron if, you know, because Sauron is just, like, I guess the greatest example of something like the Ring of Power just completely taking over your mind and everything that you are, you know, and just, it just enhanced him to the point where he is basically, you know, this, like, Dark Lord. You know, that's kind of what makes him interesting, is that even though he's just evil for the sake of being evil, since the Ring's power is in how it can just make anyone basically into have the same mentality, at least, of Sauron, is what makes him interesting. I'm just about to call him Malekith. The White Orc guy, I don't know what his actual name is, but the White Orc guy is kind of like your classic, like, revenge story. He's just like an evil dude who got fucked over by Thorin, you know, some odd amount of time earlier. And he just kind of does a lot of, like, classic evil guy stuff. Evil guy stuff, yeah. He just, like, sits around, he lets minions do the work for him. He kills one of his, like, lieutenants just to show how evil he is. You know, he does a lot of, like,
not interesting.
That kind of stuff.
I was, obviously, the orcs were trying to take over the dwarven kingdoms, because they were abandoned. Right, so that's what I'm saying. So that's the idea. I'm not saying it's good or interesting. I'm just saying the idea is he took over that, got in a war with the dwarves, and the guy that basically took his arm off, he wants revenge. So it makes sense, but it doesn't make it necessarily like good. I'm saying necessarily a lot. Good or interesting villain. Because if you're going to have a stereotypical type villain, you have to have something, like you said, to make them interesting, like the ring and their powers of how they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just a pretty paint-by-numbers villain, I think, overall. It's just nothing crazy.
Can you guys hear that?
Yeah, I'm really sorry if you can't actually hear the weed whacking going on. And just
look,
a man.
I tell you what.
He's a couple feet from me. I think he just did a head nod to me.
Tell you what, we're getting these episodes out. No matter what it takes.
No matter. We have to put up with it.
we can ask these guys to come in, come on the podcast. Get some guests.
I guess all I have to do is
open up the window and say, what do you think of The Hobbit? Hey, dude. What do you think of The Hobbit, bro? I liked it. Yeah, man, I liked it a lot, dude. It's a great movie, dude.
I thought you were going to do an accent there for a second. I was like, don't do that.
I was trying to just do like a silly voice, and then it just like...
Why? Because they're working in the yard?
I always do silly voices, bro.
I know.
And then I was like,
no one else can say that.
What is wrong? Don't make me out to be somebody I'm not.
No. So he's just not overly interesting overall. There's just nothing to him, unfortunately. He's just. If anything, he feels like he's just shoved in there to make it to reinforce the fact that there's a timer to put pressure on the characters to keep moving forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, like, if he's not around, they can really take as much time as they want, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Within reason. There's no real pressure to get there within a certain amount of time.
I thought it was really ridiculous. The dwarves are obviously known to be stubborn people.
Mm.
But they were a little too stubborn for my liking at times. And also, I just thought this doesn't even have to do with stubborn, but... The fact that the main dwarf Thorin, over and over was like, he died in battles. Like, dude, you cut his arm off and you saw him walk away, like be carried away by his other orcs. his arm got cut off, and just to be like, he died. It's like, yeah, he might have. He might have had a good chance of dying from his injuries or whatever, but you can't be so sure that he died. And he said it so many times, and I'm just like, I don't know. It just seemed really dumb to me that, like, when he showed up, he's like, impossible. I was like, dude, shut up, bro. You cut his arm off. Cool. Yeah. He's not dead, though. I don't know. I just, that bothered me.
Since this movie's PG-13, they should have replaced him saying impossible with him just saying, oh, fuck. Get their one in there.
This podcast is not rated PG-13 because.
No, we got our one. Then we get one.
You've said it already, dude.
Have I?
Yep.
Fuck.
There it goes. Yeah, so it was interesting to see that they talked a little bit more about the wizards, that there's only 5 wizards in the world, apparently, which was interesting.
I hate Radagast,
the
bro.
The brown
Radagast
wizard
the brown. Fuck this guy. He's got bird shit on his face.
Poop on his
and
hair.
Let me just spoil this for you. He has it for the whole thing. That never goes away.
I'm not surprised.
He probably has it for his whole fucking existence.
Yeah, his birds living in
his near immortal being, and he's like, nah. That whole scene, I don't really even understand what's going on in that weird scene where he's like reviving the hedgehog and there's spiders on his house, but when the hedgehog is okay, the spiders go away.
I wrote that down too.
What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, it was like there's evil that's taken, but why, if you take the evil out of the hedgehog, there's other animals that have died in the area.
So that's the, I know that that's the connection with like the necromancer, which is, you know, Sauron, and like, you know, so it's like his weird influence over the woods, and that's what Gandalf brings to Saruman, and Saruman's like,
the
necromancer,
the necromancer isn't Sauron.
Yeah, they're one and the same.
No, they're not, because he said he saw him come out. He said he saw the necromancer come out, though. If it is, that doesn't make sense to me, because he said he saw him come out of a portal.
So
Sauron never got his physical body back, dude.
Well, I was thinking the necromancers or something.
I was thinking that the necromancers were either the wraiths or the people that are bringing back the wraiths.
Yeah, I made sure to look it up, but yeah, they're one and the same. Sauron, title character in the same work, he's identified as the necromancer of Tolkien's earlier novel, The Hobbit.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Then that even that makes it worse to me. That makes that whole scenario worse, because he said maybe it was a vision, but he said he saw him step out, and then you see the shadow of him step out of this like weird portal type thing.
I don't think it could have been like a vision or like some kind of like ghoulish wraith form, but it's not like real, you know what I mean?
I guess, but it's weird because you never see a physical form of Sauron at all in any way,
well,
and that kind
that's
of
not
keeps
true.
It.
You see him in the flashback, and
that's
and
what
Fellowship,
okay. I'm
yeah.
saying like in present day, you never see a physical
form. I'm trying
form
to remember,
of
did he look the same as the flashback when like the armor and everything, or did he look different?
No, it just like a black figure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's just like a ghoulish. He doesn't actually have a physical body. He just has like a ghoulish presence, kind of. Yeah, thing.
I don't know.
Like
that just makes it worse for me. But okay.
Well, I mean, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, but
yeah, I feel like they did a bad job trying to explain to me that it was Sauron, specifically Sauron. But
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, I guess the whole point of that scene is that, you know, there's like a dark force taking over his like wood, and he's like he's noticing it, and he's like trying to warn people. That's what he goes and warns Gandalf about with his weird rabbit sled that I also think is dumb.
But then why okay, hold on, I'm
I just hate
Sauron
this guy
thing.
In general, he's just
this
dumb
Sauron
character
thing. So if it's Sauron, why is he there and not in Mordor? Because they build his tower in Mordor where they're going to bring him back, or where he has his power. Why is he in a random abandoned fortress?
I don't know.
It doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
To me.
I mean, it's not like he has to like stay in Mordor forever.
No, I know,
or whatever,
but if that's where he's coming, like, I don't know, it seemed like that's where his power was. That's where he's going to come out of or be, or that, like, he was running away from there because that's where the necromancer seemed powerful. That's
I mean,
where the necromancer was coming
stuff,
from.
I mean, with this kind of stuff, he could be other places. It says that he can shapeshift, so, I mean, he can take different forms and,
but, like,
and be
that,
in different places.
That place
and
was close to where the brown wizard was.
Yeah.
So that's why it was being affected. It just, I don't know, it doesn't mesh
it's
for me.
It's weird. It's weird. Yeah, I'll give it that. I think it's funny that Saruman's like, no, he eats too many mushrooms. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah. The next big scene is the trolls, which I didn't like.
Not a big fan of the troll scene.
Because they made the trolls seem
just dumb less, and like not they're not threatening.
Not,
I never
yeah, that's exactly
do,
what I wrote
they,
down.
They do the same thing that like the Ewoks do, and like I know I keep making these Star Wars references. I don't know why, but I guess the movies are similar in my mind. Like in Return of the Jedi, the Ewoks like put them on a you know like a. I don't know, a spigot or something like that, and they like roast them over a fire slowly, and it's like a funny little dumb scene. And it's just like I know that this you know series is not going to end. The weed whacker is back. Actually, it's a hedge trimmer. But I know that this isn't going to end where like oh they all got burned and eaten by trolls. The end. You know what I mean? So it's
yeah.
The fact that they spend so much time on this scene in general. It feels like padding for the movie to make it longer.
And they made the trolls just seem... The trolls seem too civilized, super dumb, and not threatening.
Why do they have English accents?
One of the cool... Everything in this thing has English accents.
But like the cave troll in Fellowship doesn't talk at all. It just moans and makes
exactly
noises.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So that's what I'm saying. They make them seem too civilized.
Yeah.
Super dumb and less threatening. Now, the trolls are big, burly, kind of dumb creatures. It's all about their mass weight. I get that. But when you make them civilized, because... Then they're supposed to be civilized, which gives them more of a brain and more of a smarts.
Right.
They somehow seem more dumb. And then they're not as threatening, whereas in the first Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship, the trolls seemed like this big threatening presence that was fun to watch them fight. Where in this, I was like, you kind of ruined trolls for me.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, maybe the Hobbit, the way they describe the Hobbits, maybe they did talk in this book. So maybe they are being truthful to the book, and that's what people want, is for them to be truthful to the book. But again, we're talking about this book that was written, and then 30 years later or something crazy, he wrote the other books.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, maybe he decided that the trolls should be dumb. Like, this was kind of, the Hobbit was more of a kid's book. So to have trolls that are dumb and big and talk, okay, cool, whatever. But then he's trying to make them a little more serious or whatever, he decides to kind of change them up a little bit, it kind of makes sense. But if I think, in my opinion, and I would have liked to kind of get, it's kind of hard because you want to be respectful to the writer, especially if they're not here anymore. But if you have a book, the original trilogy that you make is the Lord of the Rings, I think it's kind of good to try to be consistent with the movies once you make the movies.
Yeah.
If you're going to go back and write those, even if in the books it's that way. But maybe that, especially because even if he changed them like that, he probably is like, that's probably a better version, or he wouldn't have changed them. So
right.
You just make them that way in The Hobbit.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think they should be talking and being, you know, like this dumb kind of goofy characters. It totally takes away from it. I don't even care if they talked in the books. I think that the way they were in Fellowship is much better than how they were in An Unexpected Journey. And also, they not only made... the trolls dumb. They also made
season
make the
food.
Yeah,
they
know.
Season food.
Like one of them likes being a cook. It's a dumb, dumb thing, man. I hate that. But also, they also make the dwarves dumb. Like Bilbo's trying, like,
I don't
you know,
have parasites. Why
exactly?
Are you, dude, how are you? So
and
still
Thorin,
dead?
Thorin's even bad. And then he's like, oh shit, he wants us to not get eaten. And, like, it's just so dumb. And he has to, oh god, that kind of stuff. It's just. Man, this movie is...
That's what I said. The humor does not work
juvenile.
For me.
Yeah.
The humor does not work for me. And again, maybe the humor was like that in the books because it's more written towards kids.
Yep.
But the whole reason he sold these is because he didn't want a Disneyfied version of them. I think if he changed his vision a little bit, made it a little more serious in later books, again, this is assumptions because I haven't read them.
Yep.
Stick with that if you're going to go back and do those movies.
Right.
And again, it's hard for me because I do want to go over quickly kind of like some of the stuff we like, but I want to finish going through my notes. And sadly, a lot of that is the stuff that took me out.
A lot of it's negative, yeah.
And again, it's not that I didn't like the stuff that I didn't take notes on, because if I didn't take notes, it means it was all right or pretty good. I'll take notes if it's something that takes me out or if it's really good. So I do have good notes. But they're like the stuff that's really notable.
Right.
And then the other stuff, it's still it might be good, but it's just I didn't feel like I need to write it down.
Yeah, no, I agree.
When they were being chased by the orcs on their giant dog things.
The wargs.
Yeah.
Those were they had those in Two Towers. And
yeah, it's fine.
Like
those are fine.
Yeah.
But
that like scene.
The brown wizard was trying to distract them and get them away from them. Okay, so two issues that I have. One, he goes, yeah, I'll distract him. I'll get their attention. So he should have taken them and ridden off in a direction, and they go the other way. Gandalf follows them. And they have to hide behind rocks because they're running alongside them. Yeah. Dude, go the other direction. That was the whole point. So that, and the fact of, why the heck are they even chasing this guy? They don't want them. They want the dwarves.
Right.
And they know the dwarves are around. Why are you wasting your time? The whole chase made no sense to me. There was one smart orc who was like, oh, I think the dwarves will be over there. I'm going to go check. Yeah, none of you guys should be chasing that dude. There's no... To drive them away and to distract them, you have to have a reason to entice them. They don't want you, bro. They want the dwarves. It blows my mind. I don't know. Those were the two big... So that whole scene just kind of fell apart for me. Anyways.
Yeah. Give you chances. No, I mean... I'm pretty much with you on that. That's really... It also didn't really work for me. And that just leads right into the troll hole bit where it's like, oh, also seen I don't like. So it's a lot of... And then I'm pretty sure... Is that before or after they... That's before they... actually get into Rivendell, isn't it?
Yeah, because then they get in the hole and they come out
Rivendell and thing, and then they do the big meeting with Saruman and everything, and I don't like that part.
I was cool with it, but I understand where you're coming from.
And then, so after that, here's a weird part of this movie that's actually kind of interesting. And so after the dwarves leave Rivendell first, they kind of like leave Gandalf behind, which is a little strange. They're kind of just like, we're on a tight schedule. It's like, Gandalf wants to help you guys out, and he's a big asset, so I don't know why you'd like leave him behind. Yeah. All it really does is set up a big entrance for him to come in later when they get captured.
Well, I think the idea was they were going to be against it and kind of wanted them to almost... They wanted to... Because they went in and he's like, they're going to stop us on this journey. And
they are.
I think it was almost a distraction. Like, I'm going to have this meeting. You guys can go. Because she was like, the dwarves left. And she goes, you knew. And he's like, yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Like, that seemed like a setup. So I was cool with that.
Yeah.
Because he's a wizard. He can get to where he needed... Like, he did use some of his powers, but either way, he does kind of have a tendency to show up. So I think that was because that is the case, because they said when they're on the mountain, they're like, no, the plan was to wait for him. That's where you come in with your statement where then Thorin goes, yeah, well, plans change. We're resting and then leaving. It's like, no, we're supposed to wait. Like there was a plan to meet up with him. That's where it falls apart is when he goes, nah, we're not going to anymore.
Right.
What?
So the main part I want to talk about are these big stone giants that you
really
see
really quickly
fighting.
Though, but that's another thing that Thorin, like I said, where they're kind of too stubborn. No matter how many times somebody helps you and the elves give him a sword, he's still against people. He still just changes his mind for no reason. Yeah, we were going to wait for him, but now we're not.
Right.
For no reason. It's like he's stubborn for no reason.
Yeah.
Be stubborn for reasons, because your race is stubborn, but give me reasons beyond that.
Yeah, it does start. It does start to get kind of, you know,
old.
Ridiculous.
Okay, stone giants.
So stone giants. So this is interesting. So they have this storm, and in the book, there's like, it's a little strange how these are interpreted because they're in the book, but it's more of like a literary device to talk about how intense the storm was. They're not. From how it's there's a little
real?
Bit there's a little bit of contention. I've looked online and see what other people think, but it's not really like they don't. Really seem to actually be a real thing. They're just alluded to because they're never mentioned again in any of the lore as far as these giant stone giants that apparently fight each other. They never talked about again. So it's weird that they're actually brought to life in this movie.
Yeah.
When they're not really, as far as I think most people are kind of agree that they're not actually real because they're never really talked about again. And they're like 150 foot tall stone giants. If they were real, you know, Gandalf or Saruman would have talked to him and been like, one of them would have been like, hey, help us out. Or
something, right.
You know what I mean? So it's a little odd that that's in there. And it just kind of, I think mostly what it's used for is to just have another action set piece.
But with that being said, did you like him?
Like it feels just a little forced. I didn't hate it, but it's not, there's no, I know.
It seemed a little out of the blue for me. I was like, but at the same time, I was like, I'm not going to try to judge this too hard because I want some just cool extra lore stuff of cool creatures. So I was like, okay. And that's, I don't know. I tried to just enjoy it, but.
Yeah, I mean, the main reason I brought that up is just because I thought it was an interesting part where it's just kind of like, is this real? Is that supposed to be canon? You know what I mean? Kind of a thing. Okay, so then we get into the Goblin Town stuff where we've kind of talked about this a little bit before. The big thing
there
that
were
we
goblins
didn't talk
and orcs
to,
down there, right? Both.
It's pretty much it's all goblins.
Can't be.
Why?
Because the sword lights up, which only happens when orcs are around.
They say he says in this movie, because I thought that was true too. But when he picks up the sword in the troll hole, he said sword glows blue when orcs and goblins are around.
I thought it. Well, I know
he purposely says that line.
In Lord of the Rings, it's just orcs.
Yeah, I don't think they say it in Lord of the Rings, but he does purposely say in this line that it also applies to goblins.
I thought when Bilbo, though, fell down in that hole and then
it
Gollum shows up. No, I know, but when it turns off when... Mm-hmm.
When the last goblin dies.
Dies.
Yeah.
So, but I thought, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when Gollum actually comes and drags the body when he thinks he's dead, I thought that he said, oh, orc, mostly skin and bone or whatever, better than nothing. Maybe he said goblin and I just forgot.
Yeah, he might have, because, you know, Gollum,
I don't know.
Gollum
I don't
doesn't
remember.
Really know, like, he doesn't even, he's so, at this point, it's interesting because he's not like he is in Lord of the Rings because, Gollum kind of snaps out of it when someone mentions when Frodo says his Smeagol, his actual name. But in this, he's fully Gollum. He's like totally lost in mind because he doesn't even recognize that Bilbo's a hobbit, which is what he is. Like Gollum's a hobbit, and he doesn't even recognize that Bilbo's a hobbit.
Right, but I don't think
he's so out of his like.
He's not so because. If that were the case, he would have just probably tried to kill him. Like, the whole Riddles thing, he was like, oh, I do like playing games. And you saw this, like, happy
right,
sort of
right,
because
it's an appeal to his former humanity. Like, or his
I
former
still think there's a duality,
humanity.
Though. He's still talking
he's still,
in Wii's.
There's still a Wii, but I'm saying that, like, he is so far gone in comparison to where he is in Lord of the Rings. Because in Lord of the Rings, he's mostly helpful outside. There's that dark presence still in his mind, and it does eventually get to him. But for a
I
lot of the
say
movies...
he's mostly helpful, but he is...
Yeah. What he gets to him at the in Return of the King finally, but that's really it. That's
not
where,
at the end of at the end of Two Towers, the entirety of the right at the end, and the rest of the Return of the King. The whole reason he's bringing them to where he's bringing them is so he can get eaten by the spider. He's like, oh, we'll have her finish them off. At the end of Two Towers, he has a talk with himself and he goes, we'll have her kill them. And we're like, right after we started to like Gollum / Smeagol, at the end of Two Towers, they throw that twist at you and go, who is the she? And then the whole reason he's leading up those stairs is for that purpose.
I guess it is all for the spider. Yeah, I guess that is what he's referencing.
In a lot of Two Towers, he is somewhat helpful.
Yeah.
But they don't even find him first quarter of the movie.
Well, he's in Fellowship, too, but he's not,
yeah,
he's
but
not
he's
helping
not helpful.
Him out yet. He's with them.
But what were you going to say about the goblins? I kind of got you derailed there.
Yeah. This whole scene with Gollum, what do you think? Because... I don't think I'm a huge fan of this scene. The riddle thing. I like that they try to have like some kind of like you know some kind of conflict there without just having them fight each other exactly like what right off. But and they needed to have a way to explain how he gets the ring from Gollum because we know that Bilbo gets the ring from Gollum.
They didn't have to do that with. They didn't have to do that with riddles. He got the ring the second that he saw him, and he walked away. And it's
yeah, no,
could have grabbed
I'm
it and ran.
They Gollum had to, I guess, up. Have some kind of role in this movie because he—that's how Bilbo gets the ring. But it's strange how they do the riddle thing. That's my main. I'm not a big fan, especially since. Bilbo does cheat, and that shouldn't like you know with the what's
I,
in my
I did
pocket.
Write that down. I was like
that's
we
bullshit.
Agreed to a riddles game.
Yeah,
here.
That's not a riddle. You know
he's just taking advantage of the. You know, of Gollum because he's kind of a dumb little, you know, dude.
I mean, his riddles aren't bad, you know what I mean? Like
the time when I got before they said it. I'm just saying. I was like, it's time, bro. And he goes, you're out of time. I was like, he's going to get it because he said time. He goes, it is time. I'm like, dude, I'm smart. it wasn't something that I was like, oh, yeah, this is like super cool. Like, but I thought that it was... A little clever because it, I think it played to the duality, the little bit of Smeagol in him who likes to play those games. And then the other part of him is like, well, yeah, but if we win, we're going to kill him. So it was kind of cool, but it wasn't like.
It also felt
anything
really long,
crazy.
Too, though.
It did. I did notice it felt kind of long.
Like, that's another thing with this movie is that all the scenes feel long. Like, man, even if you know you're going to break this into three movies, why do you have to make all three? Like, you're adding. Like extra padding to all this stuff to make them also 2.5 hours or 2:45 long. I mean, you know, have three movies, but make them 90 minutes. Damn.
Yeah.
So it's a little odd, that part, but it's not the worst. And they redo another one of this, like callback to Lord of the Rings. They redo the ring falling on Frodo's finger scene with Bilbo, which I didn't like.
You didn't like that?
No, it's just like, come on, you're just redoing that. It's just a straight up like, hey, remember that from Lord of the Rings? I usually don't like that kind of stuff.
But do you think it's kind of like the way of the ring almost taking control of the person, like forcing it on them almost, maybe even on the Baggins.
We're not even shown
because
in any of the scene that like the ring has like an unholy power over, like it's not,
right.
He's not even like, when he picks it up, he's not even like, oh,
right.
Ring, like that's so cool. Like he isn't instantly drawn to it. It's just like, oh, cool.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I'm wondering if that, I'm trying to give a reasoning for why it would fall onto somebody's finger when they're really just trying to like catch it after they fall kind of thing. If maybe it's like, it's their way of trying to get it on the finger so it can slowly take them over kind of thing.
There's no reason for Bilbo to know what the ring does, like that it should turn him invisible. You know, there's no way to explain that. So there's no reason for him to put the ring on in a pinch.
Right.
So it's a little like,
and there's no reason,
you know, having it like fall on his finger and having that happen is a nice way of it. Like, oh yeah, here's a good way to get out of this situation. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. The reason it happened twice in a row is maybe it's a little more of the ring trying to take over that situation a little bit.
Maybe.
That's the only thing I can think of.
I don't know.
All I'm saying.
The ring has never been shown to have any ability to actually physically manipulate its place in the world, its physicality. It's all mental stuff. So it being like
the rings are
the ring
attracted
falling,
to Baggins,
and then it's like the ring is like trying to orient itself so it can fall perfectly on his finger is like a bit of a stretch for me.
Then that is two of the biggest coincidences in any movies ever. That the fact of a ring falling on your finger, it happened once
perfectly
in Lord of the Rings. You go,
when
okay.
You need it to, when you need it to.
That's
most.
Why I'm saying that I do think it has a little bit to do with the tie between them.
I just don't have any other evidence of that.
No, but that's what, again, like you were saying for some other movies, like I'm gonna leave it up to that, because otherwise it's just like the fact that falling onto his fingers twice
in pivotal moments, both to Frodo and Bilbo, where if it hadn't, he probably would have
right.
died.
I have to believe that makes me want to believe that it has some sort of manipulation.
Fair enough. I can see that.
Yeah. And I just think that, I don't know. It is interesting, because another thing I had was like, it doesn't show that it has any negative effects on him, but to be fair, it didn't really show to have a lot of negative effects on Frodo in the first movie either. Now if he takes it through all three of these movies and I don't see anything, I'm
that
it's just gonna
be...
make Lord of the Rings even worse to me, because well, if anything, it makes the Hobbit worse.
Just had Bilbo take it the whole way.
Right,
because he was
he was pretty messed up at that point. And maybe the Baggins bloodline, like we were saying, can obviously they can hold it for longer. Yep. But maybe Bilbo's just even better with it, which is fine, but he's so far gone because he's had it for like 50 years or something ridiculous.
Yeah. I think the whole thing is that like the reason that Bagginses are good at carrying the ring is because they actively don't want adventure. Like
yeah,
they're
maybe.
Like, I don't have pride. I'm not like, I don't think I'm anything special or like heroic. I'm just a dude and I like that. And so a ring of power, I'm like, I don't want a ring of power. I want sandwiches, you know?
Sandwiches.
I want to smoke my pipe.
Can I also say that we talked about this at in the first Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
And I rose this question, like, yeah, I don't know if it actually does ever explain this. We'll follow it through the next movies and we never talk about it. Why the heck the ring makes somebody invisible? Never is explained. It's the ring of power. Now, Sauron has it, I can understand it not making him invisible. He's a very powerful being. He can withstand the ring and still keep his physical form or something crazy like that. Whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care. So now I'm trying to think of if I've seen it on anybody else where it didn't. Like in the flashbacks where the king who chopped off his finger or whatever got the ring. I think he might have just worn it around his neck. So I guess there's not any continuity issues.
I don't think he
issues.
Actually held it. Yeah, or actually wore it. He just held it.
But I just think it's very strange that it makes you invisible. And none of the other special rings do. Look it up. I want answers.
Yeah, I know.
Right now.
Oh, it was right there.
What you finding?
The ring made its wearer invisible by shifting them into the unseen world.
I can tell that.
The ring. Okay, it doesn't make them invisible. It brings them into the halfway world. Okay, so it's a little bit. Okay, so why isn't Sauron invisible when he wears it? Because he's above the material world. So he's like, I guess the explanation is, like I said, it brings you into the Wraith world, basically. And Sauron is to the point where he's the same race as Gandalf and Saruman and stuff like that. So it brings him to the level of...
he's kind of beyond all
realities. Gandalf, technically, from what I understand of this, Gandalf shouldn't turn invisible if he wears it either. neither should Saruman.
Well, maybe
or
Sauron is
the Balrog.
Is more, just because it's the same race,
yeah,
that helps. But Sauron is supposed to be the most powerful of, you know, so maybe not. But yeah,
yeah. Well, I think he's the most powerful because of the ring, like his connection to it. Because he like, from what it's explained in Lord of the Rings, he's like, you know, all the rings were made, and that was kind of like the special one that he, I think he made for himself based on the other rings being made or something like that, isn't it? I don't know. We're getting deep into the lore stuff, but
that's what we're supposed to do. That's
yeah,
what we do. All right, wrapping up this movie because we're kind of at the last parts, yep, anyways.
One thing I do really want to say, because it's one of the big things I really like about this movie, is the dwarven song that they sing, and it's used as a musical like theme throughout the movie later. But the one that we were making fun of earlier, that one, yeah. I love that scene from the beginning of this movie, and it's just great.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The songs are pretty good.
I wish that, like, the tone of that song, if they kept it out through the whole movie and that's how the movie was, like, you know, more serious and, like, kind of darker, oh, this movie could have been great.
Yeah.
It was just less goofy.
So towards the end here, we have...
Oh, there's one big thing that I hate towards the end here.
I wonder if it's the same thing I'm thinking. But do you like the Eagles showing up?
Eagles,
I think
are
that's
okay.
Cool. I think that's cool.
I think they're gonna.
It's just typical power that he uses.
If I remember correctly, they get overused when you look at the total like amount of times they're used for the whole, including Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. They get to a point where it's like, okay. Like, what's the Eagles deal? Why did they just work for Gandalf?
Right. So Gandalf, I would assume, like, it's almost like his pets, you know, like,
yeah,
his buddies can help him.
I think the Eagles are actually much more intelligent than that, though. They're supposed to be
right, but
moralized.
I think it's not. I don't really mean pets, yeah, like that. I really mean like a companion, kind of like they'll help when he needs it, kind of thing. So yeah, I'm not saying that. I think they definitely are more intelligent. Here's a big issue that I have with the Eagles, though. When they show up, okay, mm-hmm, why didn't they take the Eagles
all the way to
from
the
very
mountain
start?
Yep.
From the very start of the movie.
From the very start, yeah, basically. Yeah, I think that's a very common, like, basically just big unanswered question of this entire trilogy, is why don't the Eagles... I mean, you could say the same thing. Why don't the Eagles just take Frodo to Mordor straight directly?
To be fair.
Or at least very close.
To be fair, it makes at least a little more sense because they have two... separate kind of things going on where Gandalf's helping the other, mm-hmm, main characters. And so if he uses the Eagles and they have their own thing, that makes sense to why, like, it just wouldn't take everybody there. Granted, maybe he could have had them like, yeah, go get Frodo and do that.
Yeah.
But at least it makes a little more sense when he's using the Eagles for his side quest things.
Yeah, in Lord of the Rings, they're only used to get him out of Isengard. That's the only time the Eagles show up.
And then at the very end when he picks up Frodo and... The Eagles pick up Frodo and Sam off the rock of the volcano to save them.
You're right. Fuck, I forgot about that part.
But I'm wondering if maybe the Eagles can only be used when Gandalf is there. Like, I know that wouldn't make a lot of sense, but let's say that.
Because he uses, you remember, in both the Isengard scene and in this, he uses like a butterfly to connect with them. So, yeah, I can understand, but like...
So again, Lord of the Rings is fine then, because Gandalf's not with them, and maybe he kind of knows how things need to play out. I'll give that. But so I can excuse it in Lord of the Rings. I'm fine. But
right.
This movie doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even to an extent, like, they should have, if they're, like, since we don't know what, like, much about the Eagles from the movie's perspective, then if they're willing to come in and help Gandalf pretty much whenever he asks for it, then why not take them, you know, at least, like, why didn't they take Frodo all the way to Mordor, or at least close to Mordor? Why didn't they take, when they took him in this movie, why didn't they start and take him from the Shire all the way to the Lonely Mountain, or at least close to the Lonely Mountain, you know, because that would have helped them bypass all this other bullshit that they didn't have to deal with.
I would have loved at the end of this movie is when they get dropped off on the rock and they see the Eagles fly away. And they're like,
and they're
is that
at the Lonely
they go,
Mountain.
They go,
like,
yeah. If
come back.
At the end, yeah, they look at the mountain, like, is that what the thing is? Yeah, Lonely Mountain. And right before it wraps up, one of the main characters goes,
but the Eagles, what? Why'd they drop us off here?
Yeah, be like, why did they leave us?
Yeah.
Bum, 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 credits. Yeah. Like,
cut to black, yeah. So, yeah.
And then a line that I hate at the end. Was that the thing you were going to say that you didn't like at the end?
No, this is the thing when they're still fighting the orcs that I really hate.
Okay, so you go with that because mine is after
the thing
that.
I hate that when they're fighting the orcs, when they're in the tree and Gandalf lights a pine cone on fire and they start throwing flaming pine cones at them and it sets everything ablaze. I'm like, that's fucking stupid. They're fighting the orcs with flaming pine cones that
like
aren't even
that.
Magical. They're just on fire pine cones.
I like that.
Why?
Why can't they be magical?
Because you see them being passed down. So, like, the Gandalf lights one, and then he just then another guy just picks up a random pine cone and lights it. There's nothing. From
They're
what I can
see, magical
see,
substance though, just like when
what's
Pippin,
magical? The
Pippin
fire
picked up the
big orb,
thing? Right? Yeah. So you can solve a magical item. Maybe he made the pine cones like so. It just I don't know. It's almost like having a little fireball that helps it spread a little quicker.
All you can see is that it's magical how he starts a fire in his hand, but the actual fire itself, there's no indication that there's anything magical
about
it. I
would agree. That would be what makes more sense. But I'm trying to find these things of like this wizard is having this magical, you know, moment and helping this out. So I thought it was cool. Could it have been done better?
Just looks
yes.
Dumb anyway.
I don't think it looks dumb, but I think that the only thing that takes me out a little bit is like it spread very quick.
Yeah.
That's
and
the
it's
only
all
reason.
Like alive trees like they don't burn
that would
like
be
that.
The only part but I was trying to lean into magic with that moment because I thought it was a cool idea
but it still isn't even like threatening though like if you're an orc why are you running away from flaming pine cones if you get hit with a flame if well, the- I got hit by a flaming pine cone that was thrown by somebody probably wouldn't be a big deal.
Well, first they hit the dogs because the dogs come to the tree. And obviously if you hit a dog even so it's a warg but dog-ish type thing it's like ow. They kind of wince and go back, especially if it's hot. And then all of a sudden, and then it starts spreading. So it's the idea that it starts spreading because that's when they start to back off.
But
if you see a warg run away, that's on fire.
Yeah. If you wanted to do that, you should have just had Gandalf like blast fire. If he had
like
magical
a little line
fire,
of fire or
something. You should have just blasted a big fireball or just a big wave of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or something like that. But even then, it still goes back into Gandalf saving the day, I think, a little bit too much.
Oh, he did. Okay,
he just does it a little bit in Lord of the Rings. It's an appropriate amount, I feel like.
The last thing that bothered me was when Thorin says, let's see. Where is this at? Sorry.
Is it like when he's like...
Okay, yeah, he goes... so he comes back. He's like, what did you do? And then he's like... Well, he's like, I told you that you were going to be only a burden, and you have didn't I say you're going to be only a burden, have no place among us, and you're going to die.
And then it's the old switcheroo.
And he goes, I've never been so wrong. I was like, dude, they don't say it like that. The only reason you said it to sound demeaning is to have a twist.
Yep.
Stop.
To have a dumb twist. Like, it's not,
it's just
value.
It's so obvious.
Yeah.
There's no one in real life would just be like, unless I'm playing a joke on my friend, which that is not a scenario where you almost die to play a joke on a friend, to be like, I'm mad, but not really.
It's almost like it really what it feels like is that you're treating your audience really dumb, like you would in a kid's movie where you have to remind them like, hey, these characters don't exactly like each other all that much throughout this movie. It's like if you had just had Thorin hug Bilbo, you know, I guess you might be worried that like does everyone in the audience remember that Thorin and Bilbo aren't on the greatest terms? You know what I mean? It's something you do in a kid's movie to help, you know, help the kids understand what they're watching again. But it's, you know, when you're watching it as an adult, you're just like, I'm not a fucking idiot. Yeah, I get it. Like, I know.
Which makes his character seem more dumb even too. And so it's like, at that point when he was getting frustrated, I was like, this man better, I knew he was going to do that, but like, this man better still be frustrated with him for a stupid reason and at least stay stubborn to his, even though it's not going to make sense, then try to make the stupid twist that I know is going to happen. All right.
To be fair, though, just one last final point on that. When they do finally, like, when he does hug him and he's like, he does say, I've never been dumber in my life, it did get me a little bit emotional.
It didn't at all to me.
Really?
Because the whole twist, just like, this is dumb. I hate this. I knew it was going to happen.
No, I knew. Yeah, I mean, I had seen it before.
But it ruined
I knew the
rest
twist,
of it.
But I was still emotionally, I was still like, oh, they like Bilbo now. Yay. It got me.
If anything, it got me more when Bilbo made his speech when he was saying, you're right. I do miss my Shire. I miss this and this because it's my home and yours was taken away from me, so I'm going to help you. That got me more. I was like, what a dude.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they started to trust him a little more then. So it's like, wow, yeah, I can. Okay. So I got on with that. Are there any other things you really, because I feel like we picked this apart and I feel like we did it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be too negative. Was there anything
we're
else?
At the end. That's
but
it.
Was there anything else you like really did like about this? What I will say is it was
pretty negative about it. Yeah.
I know. We are picking this apart, but it's not the worst movie. What I mean by this is all of these things kind of are things that I didn't really like, and these were things that definitely took me out. But as far as a whole, it was a fun enough movie to be okay. It wasn't terrible, but it was okay. But it's not the lore. I would say that even with all the other things that happened in Return of the King, I would still say probably all those other ones are better than this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just giving my opinion based on it.
Yeah, Return of the King is probably going to be much better than all three of these movies. That's kind of the problem, is the comparison problem. This movie, unfortunately, has to live in the shadow of Lord of the Rings and how great those are. And so if The Hobbit had came out first or it was completely detached from Lord of the Rings entirely, or Lord of the Rings never existed, then people, myself included, would probably look on this movie and the other two a lot more favorably. They'd probably like it a lot more. But it is tied to it, and that comparison is just almost, it's natural. It's going to happen.
Well, it's a comparison because it's in the same universe.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So they're going to get compared, and that does hurt it. And it's just an unfortunate circumstance of being in the same universe, just like you're going to compare any other, the Marvel movies to the other ones, or the Star Wars to the other ones, or any...
Yeah.
That just happens. So
I would say that starting this, it's interesting enough for me to be like, okay, I'm interested to see what happens next. It's not just like a, like when I think, okay, we got to watch the next one for next week's episode. I'm not sitting here going, okay, let's do this. Like, I'm interested enough to see what happens. I like expanding on Middle Earth and all the lore behind it. So I liked some of those moments.
I like the lore.
I want to see what happens with Smaug, the dragon.
I like, it's just to kind of round up all the things I like about it. Still like Gandalf. Like Bilbo, he feels like his own guy. He's very different from Frodo.
I think Bilbo
He's...
does a lot better job of... Okay, he is a more interesting main character than Frodo was.
Okay, I mean, I could maybe even get on board with that. I'm definitely not, like, abhorrent to that. It's, I know we had a big, long discussion about Frodo and Sam on the Lord of the Rings episode.
Yeah, and
but...
quickly, really quick, why Frodo to me... I know I talk about this. No, like, really quickly, for real. Because after watching this movie... It's not that, yes, Frodo had a huge burden. Mm-hmm. That is very apparent. Yep. He took the most powerful item and had to take it upon himself. But because of that, and because at the start he decided, I'm going to take this ring there, and no matter what came his way, he still did that. The character arc was not as interesting to watch. You didn't get to see his character arc. That's why Sam, for me, had a more interesting character arc, and you could see all this other stuff happening that he had to face. And then Bilbo... Now he has the ring, so maybe this will change, but I don't think it's going to be drastic as
it
far as...
It can't be.
Right.
Because he goes on for having the ring for another 50-odd years.
And in the beginning of that movie, he's not sloshing around like a drunk type of dude like Frodo was.
The ring the ring's influence, I think, gets worse the closer you get to Mordor.
And probably just the more that Sauron is... actively trying to get at it, because he was he was closer to time. All his armies were built up. He got Saruman on his side. He was putting all his power into that ring.
Because, end of Return of the King, Gollum completely loses any touch with reality when he's actually in the volcano.
Yeah.
He jumps off the edge to get the ring. He just doesn't care.
He didn't care when he was falling into the lava with the ring. He's like, I got it. I'm
lava.
Cool. I know I'm falling into a pit of lava, but he didn't even notice.
He's in perfect glee that he's falling to his death, but he has the ring.
Yeah.
So I'd have to look more into it, but I think proximity does matter. So that would explain how.
Well, to be fair,
Bilbo, because they're going away from, they're going further away.
No,
if you look at the map, what?
They're not.
The Lonely Mountain and everything is further away from Mordor. They're
not
going
compared
north.
To the Shire. If you look at it in comparison to the Shire, look. Unless this map is wrong, look at this. So you have it's directly north. Of Mordor, but it is far, it's closer.
Yeah.
My point is, it's closer to that than is the Shire. So, if anything, if you take a radius around that, you follow that circle radius to wherever Frodo would be on the south end, he was more affected, I would say.
Yeah, so
I think it's a mix.
As Frodo leaves the Shire, he's closer than Bilbo ever was to Mordor with the ring.
So,
pretty much.
What I am saying is, I think that it has to do with Mordor a little bit, but I also still think it does have to do with the. Like I said, him really putting all his power into the ring, trying to really get at it. He had Saruman on his side. He had an army.
Yeah.
He had more of a reason to want that ring back at that moment in time. It was his time to shine.
Okay. Well, that's Hobbit, an unexpected journey. It's okay.
Yeah.
Has its problems. It could have been a lot better. It's a little bit of a disappointment from going from Lord of the Rings. But I think overall we're still pretty excited to see where it goes and see the conclusion of it. So
I mean, you know it, but
I know generally, but there's a lot of stuff that I've forgotten that happens, you know what I mean? Cool. With all these. So
well, go follow us on all the places we can be followed.
Yeah.
Instagram
in
main one
you
at That's Movies Brother. If you guys you know, if you want to follow me at Tyler C. Gillette. And if you guys would leave a rating, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, that would be fantastic.
5 stars.
I mean, 5 stars would be great, but I'm hoping if you liked it, then that's why you're at the end here. So hopefully you will give it 5 stars. But whatever rating, look,
no,
we'll take criticism too. You know what I mean?
Not there.
We'll take anything.
You can send me criticism, but don't rate us bad.
Just give us a rating, please. Anyways, so yeah, do that if you would. That would help us out a lot. We appreciate you. We'll see you later. And on to The Hobbit number dose, whatever that was called.
Desolation of Smaug! Da, da, da.
I was going to go Lord of the Rings theme there.
Oh.
Wrong.
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 You suck.